another episode of Theater Cleaners. Today we're going to be talking about an absolute classic and a super sentimental movie of mine. If you buy me a beer, I'll tell you the story as to why, but either way, we're going to be talking about Hot Rod. It is an absolute classic. It's a cult film, but we're joined today by the senior editor at 12 Midnight, John Warder. He is a big fan of this movie. And,
what's up, y'all? Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought I had to say hey.
No,
I
mean, you're good, man. You got more to say than hey?
No, I mean, keep going. But yes, I agree, man. This is a sentimental movie for different reasons. But yes, I do love this film.
Yeah, it's an absolute classic. And I mean, it's the Lonely Island, guys.
Yeah.
There's nobody better, especially if you were alive and around during like 2010s SNL era. Like, it just brings back such like nostalgia to that time period.
Oh, yeah.
But either way, Dom's going to give us a quick synopsis as to what this movie is for those of you who haven't seen it yet. And if you haven't, you definitely should.
Well, are you ready?
Yes.
How do you say
it? Why are you saying that?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What?
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 Whiskey?
John Horner?
Oh, man.
Not yet.
Said it finally. Finally, someone said it correctly.
Oh, finally?
Yeah, John Horner.
Quarter?
Yep.
Quarter. Okay.
Well, Dom, tell us what this is about.
Thank you. I will.
That was great. It was a good little bet.
A self-proclaimed amateur stuntman prepares for the jump of his life to clear 15 buses to raise money for his stepfather Frank's life-saving heart operation and to win Frank's respect. Again, that's always the problem. I always have the wrong syntax. I'm not great at reading lines. Co-written, directed, and starring the Lonely Island, a.k.a. Akiva Schaffer.
Yeah,
you said it right.
Wow. Andy Samberg and Yorma.
I was actually like really excited when I realized you're about to read their names because two of them are different.
Dude,
well, I got one.
I've always struggled with that, actually. Like,
that's a passing grade, 66%.
Not bad. Yeah.
Not bad. Yeah. You're solid C. Solid C.
Yeah.
And you guessed on one of them big time.
I did guess.
You
took a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
That takes courage.
Yeah.
Yorma is the interesting name. I think the most interesting
it is.
Name.
You know,
really
now,
would expect
now
to be Yorma.
Yeah, now hear it. No, I don't.
No,
now hearing
it,
now hearing it is like, that makes way more sense.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. But it's like,
but, you know,
even then, like growing up, I used to watch like all of the Lonely Island videos on YouTube, even before they like got to SNL. And every time I heard their names, I was always like, what?
Andy Samberg is
so
weird name.
Rare of names. Like, you never really.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Samberg is so rare of a name. No, but like Yorma and Akiva, like I've never heard any other person name that. Like, it's such like a rare name and it helps him stand out. But it's really cool because it's Akiva's first directorial movie, which is super interesting.
That's awesome.
I don't actually know if he's done another one since.
Oh, I think he has. I think he did Popstar.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
pretty
yeah.
sure he
that's
did
another
Popstar.
Lonely Island movie.
I would say it's a great movie and it's very entertaining. It
Popstar?
Just did a whole no, I'm talking about this movie, sorry.
Oh.
Hot Rod. I just had a thought that I was kind of lingering on.
Yeah, go for it. Go.
In terms of him doing another movie, I wouldn't be surprised if studios were not likely to greenlight him on something because Hot Rod kind of flopped in theaters. That doesn't make it a bad movie.
Right. And what's wild too is like Popstar also kind of flopped as well. It's like they get these like good cult, they make cult classics. And it's like, if you're going to invest, you're in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
Hot Rod's definitely like grown outside
of
its
money.
Office.
It's probably made its money back, probably, right?
Is it?
You think?
Oh, it definitely did. Because it skyrocketed once it went to like direct to home. Like, especially once they added it to Netflix back in like 2015, 2016. That's when it like really took off. Because it's like, it came out in 2007 and I was in fourth grade at that time. So it's like, I know I didn't watch it when it came out, but it's like once it hit Netflix, that's when I found out about it. And I swear to God, I've watched it at least every couple of months since I first watched it.
They just made it too early for their right, like, viewers.
I mean,
right?
I love this movie. I saw this movie. It came out in 2007, so I was a sophomore in high school. And I saw this movie in a drive-in movie theater in Ennis, Texas. Y'all ever been to that movie theater?
No.
Nope.
Drive-in movie theater. So it was just like, I was with some other buddies. We were fans of SNL. We're like, it's Andy Samberg. We got to see this. Totally met the expectations. But yeah, you guys, I feel like maybe we were at the start of the age group that would enjoy that and then just had to wait on you fourth graders to catch up, you know?
Yeah.
How
actually, yeah.
How long were Andy Samberg and Bill Hader like on SNL when like they a good made this.
Four
they
seasons.
Went in together. They yeah. went in together. I don't
yeah,
know.
But were they on before they made this?
Yeah, they were. So I looked it up because I was wondering, like, why did this film flop? You know, digital shorts were a thing on SNL, and you know, was it Lazy Sunday? Wake up in the late afternoon. Have y'all seen that video? The Chronicles of Narnia thing. It was one of their first digital shorts that blew up. That came out in 2005. D in a Box came out 2006.
That's a good one.
So it's like these guys like had some momentum. People knew, and then this movie came out and it didn't do well. But then Jizz in My Pants came out in 2008, and I'm on a Boat came out in 2010. Dude. So it's like it's almost like the success of the digital shorts might have brought people's attention back to the movie.
Oh, I totally think so. Because it's like, what is it? Like a Boss and I'm on a Boat would definitely be like
a Boss is a classic. Like,
dude, yeah. I actually remember being in like fifth or sixth grade playing those songs around school. Like, that was just what the
kids were
listening to.
And then all the adults are like,
to.
What the hell are you listening to? Like,
this is not age appropriate.
Totally. The digital shorts were definitely a time.
But I mean, before we all like sat down to watch the episode for this podcast, like we've all seen the movie before, but like,
had you seen it before?
No, I hadn't.
Okay, you had Don, I hadn't seen it. Yeah,
I hadn't seen it.
Oh, you just blew my mind. Flew
under my radar.
Dude?
Well, here's the thing, folks. I wouldn't say comedies are my go-to movies that I watch. It's just, if I was to write a movie, I'd write a comedy.
Okay.
But again, I've heard this before. If you were to write something, it's not usually things you want to watch.
That makes sense.
But I really enjoy to watch like drama stuff, like serious things.
All right. So you were saying you did not watch this. You had never seen this film before, right, Dom?
No, I hadn't. Because my phone keeps on falling off my lap with my notes on it. Like I was saying, comedies are just not my go-to movie genre.
Yeah.
I don't dislike them. I just enjoy like a more serious drama. Not even like, I don't even love action movies either. Like, of course I'll watch like any kind of movie.
Dom doesn't like movies.
I hate movies. Okay. I just,
sorry to call you out, Dom, but I do recall from last season, you telling me how basically you can't watch anything that's not like a drama or a super serious movie.
I feel like you're misquoting that.
Oh,
but you could be right. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, because you were talking about your friend showing you something. You were just like, dude, I just couldn't get into it.
No, it's just those are more like TV shows.
Cinematography standards that I'm watching high cinema.
Dude, I'm kind of a fucking snob, all right? Like, I want my film to be like legitimate like techniques used to cause catharsis in someone. No, I just like, it's just... For me, I enjoy like a serious drama that uses like actual like camera techniques and stuff to do things. And to respect this film, it actually uses the camera in an interesting way. And it's not just it's not like a sitcom style of shooting. Like the first one that pops to my mind is The Office, but that's not even like a perfect example.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got you.
But it uses a really standard like multicam setup that's uninteresting visually. And that's what a lot of comedies do. It's a cheap cinematography because they try to make them cheap because it's not like a massive project that's going to have a lot of
humor. Subjective. Yeah. This movie flopped in the box office.
Its objective is not to be a award winning film for like an Oscar for cinematography. That's totally fine. And that's completely valid for something to be. It's just not my preferred movie to watch. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy them.
But it sounds like this movie surprised you.
This movie did.
Okay.
Because I always am surprised by movies that are not for that do it.
Yeah.
We had another example of one recently that did similar stuff, although the lighting was not exactly the same kind of like cinematic lighting, but Mean Girls we watched it used the camera more as a character than it would like normal like chick flick movie that I feel like wouldn't use the camera kind of as a character or in interesting ways.
Mm-hmm.
It did. And I was surprised by that too. And I mean, I've seen that one before,
but
I mean, just like it's more interesting visually. And this movie does a really good, this movie as in Hot Rod does a really good job at using the camera and using its visuals in a meaningful and interesting manner. And one of my favorite shots in the entire movie is at like the very beginning.
Yeah.
Is when, They're talking about like what their plans are. And then he finds a bag of fireworks in the bathroom and then they go to light them off. And it's the four of them standing. And it's like, it's shot in, I don't know what the exact aspect ratio is, but it looks like it's like two something, like it, maybe 2:3. I don't know, but it's a wide angle.
Yeah.
And it's just them all kind of in shot with right in the middle of the fireworks. And it's a really interesting visual like shot. And then you expect something to happen, like you expect it to like explode in their faces, but it just kind of.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like that is that edit right there. I love that you like that joke so much, and it's an early one too. Yeah. It almost like kind of
almost
sets,
a throwaway.
It almost sets the tone for the rest of the movie, you know, yeah, because there's other stuff like that, and it's a great editing technique because it kind of cuts before the climax happens, right? And there's many other moments like that I really enjoyed about this movie, just in the editing aspect of things, where. I love when he says, right before he does the ramp over the pool, it's like one of the earlier stunts, and he says, "Dear God, please don't embarrass me in front of Denise." He goes down, goes right, nosedives into the pool, and then it just jump cuts. We don't see him get out of the water. It jump cuts to him walking home drenched in water. It's just
and what's even better, too, is he's like, the look on his face is you can tell he's embarrassed, but when he gives, like, the prior scene that he's coming back home before that, you see him like flip out the kickstand, take care of the moped. And this one, he just kind of like plops the moped in front of the door. He's just like,
he's dejected.
He's just done, dude.
Yeah. So then he walks in the house. He's like, "Hey, you guys missed the jump. Totally nailed it."
Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing about that shot too, is I feel like there's a duality to it to where they cut right at the perfect time for a joke. They cut at the perfect time for a joke. But they're also not afraid of letting the camera roll for a joke, too.
Mm.
And that one kind of shows an example of the same one. It's like an awkwardly long shot of him like going down the ramp into the pool, and then it cuts perfectly. It's like, I feel like a lot of other comedies wouldn't do that. They wouldn't have the wide of him just going down the ramp. They'd like do like quicker cuts before it to like add energy to it when it's unnecessary.
Totally.
The whole joke is the fact that it's not. Doesn't have any energy to it. And that's what's perfect about it is it's just stagnant. Like it watches him go up, cuts to the people like waiting for him to get up. And then it cuts back. I think probably to the same shot. I think it's a little like the Hitchcock, like you cut from something, cut to people and then cut back like to change how you feel about it.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it's like him going up the hill and there's no like time missing in the shot. I think it's the exact same shot where they cut in between
probably.
To where it feels like he's like taking longer to get up the hill. Because his bike can't get up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like sitting at the top and it's just like just an awkwardly long amount of time for him to like go down that ramp and go into the thing. And it's just like, you're like, okay, maybe he's going to do it.
Nope. I wouldn't be surprised if it, like, because there's so many examples of that where it's just, it's like cut at the right moment. I wouldn't be surprised if this was storyboarded to a T. You know,
probably.
I mean, there's definitely improv in the film, but it does seem like a lot of the jokes were planned out before they even, like, as far as editing jokes were planned out before. They filmed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is to hit like 2 points. A, that one, and B, also like building that tension like you were talking about. Because like literally the first couple of shots in the film, like when it's introducing you to Rod and it's like slow-mo shots of him trying to jump a staircase, but it's three steps and he rolls down all of them or whatever, you know, sliding on the glove and like twisting the throttle or whatever. It's like slow-mo shots with just great sound effects that are just ramping up the energy. And then it goes right into the first jump trying to clear the ice cream truck or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it like, I feel like the editing, the pacing, and the cinematography all like build up that like, oh, this is about to be like pretty legit. Oh, my God. And then it just falls flat on its face as soon as it goes through the jump.
And what a great stunt. I mean, it looks like that guy got hurt.
I
saw that, but I don't know if that's actually what happened. So apparently on IMDb, they said that he broke his leg.
Yeah.
But I did watch the director's commentary last night, a little bit of it, and they didn't mention it. Maybe because they're not supposed to, but
maybe it was one of those.
For our lawyers.
Yeah. Maybe it was one of those breaks that you don't really know about until it's like later.
Yeah.
You know
like I mean?
It's like, it's one of those hairline fractures. It's like, that fucking hurt.
Yeah.
But I think I'm fine.
Apparently they said like after the take, the guy was like definitely had the wind knocked out of him. He's like, "You think you guys are gonna use that?" And Akiva was like, "Yeah, we're using that take."
See, the perfect thing is like another thing that this movie does well is they let the stunts like speak for it.
Mm.
The whole thing about the movie is that he sucks.
Yeah.
Right? And they show you these stunts that like suck.
Yeah.
They're like perfect for what they are. And it's it kind of goes to that like tension a little bit to where it's like they're showing you and they're like lingering on it. There's no like cutting between the action. It's all just like the whole stunt. You watch the entire stunt from start to finish. And it's like so perfect.
And the guy puts their body out there. I mean, it's a $25 million budget. I feel like that's pretty good for a comedy.
I think they had like three or four stunt doubles. And this goes back to like, I don't know how true this is, but apparently they made prosthetic noses for all the stunt doubles because of Andy Samberg's nose. And they made
I feel like that just for a joke.
They made them unrealistically big. So then Andy Samberg would get self-conscious or whatever about his nose.
That's what's great about this movie too. It's made by friends. Like these guys were three best friends growing up. So they can do jokes like that on set.
And it's like, even with Bill Hader, it's like Samberg is chill with Bill Hader. And so are the other Lonely Island guys. They're all around 30 Rock during their time at SNL or whatever. But even Danny McBride, like this was, I think, his second film. And I mean, I think this catapulted him to a lot, but I think Eastbound and Down was his next step after this one.
I'm sure he was in some other things between there, but it is cool seeing Danny McBride in this because when I saw it, unheard of person, but like you see a lot of like his humor has carried on really in every other thing he's done. And it's all like, it's like, man, This film actually like gave him a chance to really show like his chops because he stands alone.
Dude, I think one of the spots in the film where he like truly gets to like flex his comedy and it also just shows like kind of the friendship that they had on set is the scene when they introduce Denise to the group and Danny McBride is sitting there telling Bill Hader about his dream.
Uh-huh.
That was a legit just like them kind of improvising and like Danny McBride's actually telling Bill Hader about his dream and you can see Bill Hader like kind of smirking. And every time he starts smirking, he takes a sip of the beer to hide it.
Bill Hader is a great actor.
Yeah.
And when he breaks character, you know, something's gotta be funny.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yes. Dude, dude. Okay. Not to like go too off track, but
I'm going to go off track.
100%, dude.
That's what this whole podcast is. It's actually just be off track podcast.
Yeah. But also this is like, Bill Hader and Andy Samberg, throw in Jason Sudeikis in this movie, and you got my top three SNL cast members of all time. Because the 2010 era is like my staple era of SNL.
I mean, we're probably biased because we didn't see the original.
Everybody's like, biased to their era.
I went back and I watched all of them.
I know, but it'd be different if like that was the first SNL for you, right? Like, that'd be different. I feel like everybody's got to be biased towards their era. But I think that era with Andy Samberg and like Bill Hader is one of the golden eras of SNL.
Oh, for sure.
Who would you say?
I mean, Kristen Wiig was there too.
Kristen Wiig was great, dude.
Yeah.
But when it goes to my sidetrack was basically like best moment for me when Bill Hader breaks characters every time he does Stefan.
Mm. Yes. You know the story on that? So Seth Meyers would write those jokes and he would see him for the first time on the stage.
Oh, that's great.
And so they'd be putting up the cue cards and he'd be reading them for the first time. And they were just like, the goal was to make him laugh.
is that whenever he did was that when he was doing them on like the news one or whatever?
Yes. Yeah.
That shit's
so good.
Weekend Update.
Yeah.
Yeah. But dude,
I think my favorite skit's Corpse Hookers. Personally. You ever see that one?
Mm-mm. I might have seen it.
Oh, it's fucking hilarious.
Is it a recent, like a 2010s or what?
I don't know. I think it's more recent. It's not an old school one, but it's real funny. It's like a bunch. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do love SNL, man. There's some good gems in there.
Absolutely. How to tie this back though to the movie is speaking of Bill Hader, like his character that he plays in this movie is based on one of his real life friends. Which is hilarious. And you can go, there's an interview online, just literally go in and Google Bill Hader hot rod character explanation or whatever, and you can pull up the video. But the scene where Bill Hader's like working on his tool bench, gets the like little piece of metal stuck in his head while he's tripping on LSD. That's a real story of his friend. And the best part about it is the fact that like his friend comes up to Bill Hader after the movie and he's like, "Hey, I saw that Hot Rod movie that you did. Did you know that like what happened to your character happened to me in real life?" And Bill Hader just goes, "Dude, it's based on you." And he, like, in the interview, he's like, not to discredit this dude, like, he's one of the smartest people I know. He's gone on to become like a professor at Northwestern or something like that.
Just straight
like,
out of the guy.
Yeah, never says his name, but it's like, that's so funny.
Which
funny.
Professor at Northwestern?
Yeah, let's look
like
at
that.
His LinkedIn yeah, profile. Let's look at Bill Hader's LinkedIn.
Dude, that would be crazy. If I was one of the students and I saw that, I would start Googling my professors so fast and just be like, yeah. Hey, you seem chill, dude. Give me a good grade.
Dude. One of the funny things that I saw, I don't even know if it's really a joke. It's like a little tiny throwaway moment of just letting the camera like roll a little bit longer is, we could probably talk about this for a second.
Oh, for sure. Let's go.
This goes back to the whole thing where it's just like, this movie does it so well in editing.
Yeah.
It knows the perfect time to cut.
Totally.
They let the camera go a little longer and they let the camera be, they cut when they need to. I don't think there's many moments in this movie where it's like, that felt weird or like off. It's like the perfect time for a cut every time. And that scene when he's getting taken to the hospital, it's just like rolling just a little longer than you see him. Like he when points to the trash can and he goes to the hospital.
But then
he goes inside and it just like rolls for like, I don't know, maybe like half a second longer, but he's like fighting the nurse.
He's just like,
oh shit. Dude, that's the best.
And then they sit him down. It's like they could have cut after that. Totally. Like, oh, hospital. They could have cut after that. And a lot of movies probably would have.
And I think that also says like, it's great that they kept that cut out, but that probably says a little something about maybe Akiva's directing and also Bill Hader's like commitment to the bit, you know, like it's really cool.
But I also think that's where like a sketch comedy person really comes in and like, is like, hey, I know we did our bit, but there's more we can do.
Cause their background, I mean, maybe not their background, all of them, but I mean, a lot of influence they have is probably from SNL stuff they've done on SNL.
But also, they were friends since like super young. So they've been doing videos before SNL. Like, that's what got them into SNL.
Yeah, that's true.
You ever see We Like
Even
Sports?
Then, the live the live skits. Like there isn't like, you don't cut on a skit when you're doing it kind of. Like if there's a moment for a joke, you do it.
That's improv, man. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's definitely improv in the film.
And then? Yeah.
Oh, he's doing yes and.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking to myself.
Tell me. And then,
I was thinking to myself. I was like, where are you going with that? Oh, okay.
So
that was a brain fart.
Yes, we'll do improv 101 together. That could be fun.
That would be fun.
It's yes and or no but, right? Or something like that.
I don't think there's no buts because I think actually but is the poison word in improv. It's always yes and.
Got it.
And then they also said if there's allergies, never just go, I have an allergy to water. You know, like it's just throwaway joke. Don't ever do allergies.
Okay.
Allergies suck
on the improv.
Well, it's kind of like a killer because then it's like,
great. It's not a yes and. It's a no, I can't eat this because I'm allergic to it.
Yeah, that's kind of.
You have peanut allergy here. Have this peanut butter.
Yeah, exactly. No, I can't.
Yeah, oh, man. Over. Dude.
You're a life fan of the skit.
okay, actually, though. I mean, like we've said, there's like so many great bits throughout this movie. But what are, not to pinpoint one, but what would you say are like your top couple, maybe?
Who are you directing that question to?
Skits? I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Are we talking about skits or just like sequences? Like, what are we talking about specifically?
I call them bits because it's like,
there's a lot of bits.
It's like, they string a lot of
bits. Whiskey is a bit. Yeah. That's a bit. Totally unnecessary to the storyline.
Yeah,
but it's a bit.
But it's a bit.
Yeah,
it's not quite a sequence of like the film. It's just like it's a series of jokes that are. Yeah.
Yeah, like.
Got it. That makes sense.
I mean, to hammer home the point of like it being a bit, like Cool Beans.
Totally.
Cool beans.
Yes, Cool Beans is great. Did you know that they actually almost didn't put that in the movie?
Yes, I did.
They almost didn't put that in the movie.
I could see why they would. Almost not do that. It's like so random and out of nowhere.
Akiva, there's so many parts like that, but that one is very out of nowhere. And apparently Akiva didn't want it in, and then Yorma and Andy like edited it to make it better and more spicy. And then they did it at like the last test screening and it totally landed. And like, all right, we're gonna keep it in. They took out another part that they liked.
Cause they overheard someone at the test screening that was like, oh yeah, that Cool Beans thing was like my favorite bit of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like, we got to do it.
I think that's also a testament to, like, if you're making comedy, and especially if you're making comedy with friends, keep in the stuff that makes you guys laugh. Oh. Because that resonates. People like, you know, people like The Lonely Island. That's why they got a cult following, because they kind of have, I guess, seen them grow up and, like, they kind of know their humor. Mm-hmm. And so that is Cool Beans is totally their humor. And it's absolutely great that they kept that in, because, you know, like you were bringing up earlier about the digital shorts, that's some of the same sort of styles of comedy that they would put on SNL, you know, and even on their own internet videos.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of bits, that's like curious as to like why they would keep it versus not keep it. Ebenezer Scrooge at the end of the last jump.
Yeah, that's random.
So random, right?
A good goose. I was thinking about that last night, too. I was like, wow, you almost cut Cool Beans, but you didn't think about cutting Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, like, I'm like, I feel like that one didn't land in world or like out of it. Like,
not at all. Like, so not at all. When we're talking about it. You know?
He goes, cook goose. And then nobody in the film, like,
celebrates
at all.
Or like, anything.
Like, nobody like even recognizes that it's like even there. Like, it didn't land in world or on screen.
Okay.
And he's in the school bus.
Cook goose.
Oh, my God.
What?
No. The other random bit, but this one actually lands. The second time Andy Samberg goes out and is doing his Tai Chi, the fisherman.
Oh,
that just starts oiling him up.
So good.
Dude, every time I see that, I always think that's Owen Wilson in like heavy
makeup. I thought
it
was Will Forte, and I was looking on IMDb. I swore it was going to be him. I was going to talk about it.
It's not him. But it always feels like it should be like a mainstream comedian.
Would have been great.
Prosthetics or whatever,
but
it's
not.
He does look, it's just a random extra that they're like, "Hey, you're gonna oil this guy up," and just
he does look super familiar though.
He does. Right? I thought he was a guy with a bunch of makeup that we all would know.
Yeah, it's not. I always thought
maybe
it was gonna
maybe
be something
they were trying to do is make it look generally familiar to somebody. Are we sure it's not somebody?
It's not. I look
like
not.
It's not nobody. Will like Forte. It's a nobody.
Definitely, and it's definitely not Owen Wilson.
No, I just saw I saw the dude's nose and I saw like a little crook in it.
It's
and
not
I was
quite,
like,
yeah. It's not quite the same nose, but I can see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I'll say just to answer your question, there's like little bits. I definitely have favorite scenes, but as far as little bits, I like, you know, whenever they do the high fiving back and forth, just like, and that's how it's done. I like the part where at the end of the montage of them talking about the plan for, you know, what they're going to do, how they're going to save Frank's life. And then they celebrate, let's party. And they like pop the bubble wrap. It's just like these little things, you know. And
even the homeless dude going like, "Yeah, we got to get so many shopping carts." And he's like, "What are you guys doing? I'm inside."
Yes, and I even like the stuntman movie, you know, like that they did at the screening. You know, that was a movie within a movie that they had to edit and make for it, and it's got bad graphics. It's just like there was a lot of thought put into this film, and there's probably so much footage. You know, it's just like there was a lot of planning, even with the characters of the old guy putting the oil on him or the cooked goose, like random things that they had to cast.
Yeah.
And get costumes for.
They're also
Robinson. What are you talking about?
The like Asian dude with the really, really short hair that always is dancing
throwing
out the flyers. Like,
yes.
That's a character that they had to cast that is like not much purpose, but it's such like a little good reference every time he's
he always breaks the fourth wall.
Okay, so did you know he was Andy Samberg's roommate?
No way.
For like 1 year.
That's
apparently
great.
I only got that because of the director's commentary.
Okay.
And apparently he would walk around naked a lot. Seems like the kind of guy that probably would.
Oh my God. Sorry. You know, right after Denise makes Andy shit himself and he goes back home and he's doing laundry and he's like, doing laundry without pants on.
Yeah.
Literally, it cuts.
Wait, when was this?
Right after
he crapped himself.
He craps himself from the Tai Chi move. It cuts back to the house and he's got a laundry basket and he's in his boxers and he's just singing about like doing laundry with no pants on. And then Yorma like calls him in to show him like the video. And when he comes in, it's literally like him center framed in the hallway, no pants on, cut to him wearing pants, same scene. It was just one of those like,
apparently that was intentional.
Really?
Okay.
Then
but I looked. I was watching. I was like, I don't know why this was intentional, but yeah.
Okay. Then is the first time Rod puts the mustache on, it's upside down, and then immediately the next scene, it's right side up.
I didn't notice that one. Continuity director over here, Todd Luther.
I love catching like the little small things that like aren't caught because it's like I feel like flaws.
Script soup. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like the flaws, like, especially for a comedy like this, like the little flaws like that just make it feel so much better because it's just like they just wanted to have fun.
Totally. Going back to the bit thing, I think my favorite bit, thinking about it now, just kind of popped back in my head, is my favorite bit is the spirit animals.
Okay.
I'd love that for no random reason. And it's hella funny. It's like fox spirit, guide me in the forest or whatever. It's like eagle spirit. It's like his eyes light up.
Okay, oh, so yeah. That's funny. Can I just say something? That yeah. It's funny you bring that up, because one of your questions before the show, you were asking us like, hey, what's something that you thought fell flat? If I had to pick anything that, fell flat, I thought the spirit animals kind of fell flat, because it's like, look, it fits the movie because it's a random movie. But if I had to pick one thing, I don't feel like it really truly paid off. And I didn't really understand why it was there in the first place.
I feel like it was all set up for the final jump, because the last spirit animal is a house cat.
It's a house cat. Yeah,
I know. Well, there was even another spirit animal that he didn't even refer to. That was in the end. So that's what I mean. It was almost a Power Rangers moment at the end. I thought it was funny, but if you had to pick one thing that you probably didn't need in the next cut, it's probably that.
I feel like it was a callback to like 80s action movies. Because you have stuff like, the example that pops in my head is like Karate Kid, but that's not right. But like, it's kind of like these movies that have like, oh, these like action hero cool guys have like some kind of like spiritual connection to something.
Yeah.
I feel like that's where it was coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's where it was coming from. It was like that kind of vibe. He's like supposed to be like, the movie is set in 2007. I think it's set in the same year they shot it, but it feels like it could be set a long time
ago. Well, and that's the music, right? It's got that 80s nostalgia music.
It's the whole film is supposed to be nostalgic, even though it's like set in that current time, but it like feels like it could also be set like in the 70s.
Totally.
At the same time. And I feel like that whole like 70s vibe is that spirit animal. Like, I'm going to do karate or something. It's going to have like a spirit animal like with me or some shit like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where I could be totally wrong. I have no proof to back that up, but I feel like
it feels nostalgic.
That's where the emotion comes from.
Right. And I think
for me, at least.
Well, and I agree with you, man. Like, I think that the corniness of that is excused because there is that 80s nostalgia movie moments. Yeah. Like, there's the Hulk Mania tank top, which is like this. Andy Samberg is an adult and he's still wearing that tank top. You know what I mean? Just like he can call on his hawk and his dolphin, bottlenose dolphin.
Dude, they bring in a good number of WWE references. I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere that there's like five or six different WWE references throughout. That.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I feel like they do kind of call on those spirits a little bit. Like it looks like they were going to lean into it more and then they don't.
Yes.
Because like they have the pool scene. Like, why does he need to hold his breath longer? Because they're doing the dolphin thing. Like,
I mean,
spirit animal's a dolphin part. And then, like, the fox one is that when he's jumping the pool? I think that's when he's jumping the pool is when they do the fox.
Probably.
Or that's the eagle.
And I think
that might be the eagle.
I think eagle's at the very start of the movie whenever he does his first jump into the ice cream truck.
Yeah.
But it might have been a fox before the pool.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I don't know. It's just, like, it almost seems like they're going to lean into, like, an aspect of that animal a little bit and like play a joke on that whole thing. Like, he's thinking like they're going to help him do certain things.
Yeah.
But then they don't really.
So what I'm hearing is you kind of agree with me now.
No,
it's not necessarily needed. Yeah. You know,
like,
it's not.
I like the bit though. I think it's funny.
It is a funny bit.
It feels like it's like that 80s like action hero leaning on some spiritual whatever for no fucking reason.
Dude.
But also my other favorite bit is all the little bits. Like you're saying, the bubble wrap,
The fireworks.
The fireworks. That's honestly one of my favorites. I found fireworks in the bathroom.
You want to go light them off?
No, sorry. I found fireworks in the men's bathroom.
Yeah. Like, just to clarify.
Yeah. I don't know. This is random. And you want to go light them off and then it's nothing. And then what's another one? When he's drowning and then Isla Fisher, Denise, she like
does mouse him out. Yeah.
And he says to his brother, "Do you look like she was making out with me?" Like one of those, like those little throwaway ones.
It's very like Sandlot joke.
Yeah.
You know?
The throwaway, like stupid little tiny moments where it like lets it linger just enough.
Yeah. I think the reason why it works, and I'll pass it back to you, Todd. The reason why it works is because the movie doesn't really make Andy Samberg look like a total jackass. Like it's endearing. Like he's able to get away with like, does it look like we made out during CPR, you know, because like he actually like believes in himself, you know? And so the movie doesn't make him look like a total jackass or a jerk. He's like truly trying to be great and he keeps failing. But then, hey, like I just almost drowned, but did I almost look like I was making out with the hottest girl around? You know, like, dude, it's like he looks for the positive in every moment.
Dude, and the fact of like what he looks up at her or whatever, and she's still like smiling. She's like glad she's alive or he's alive or whatever, but he's just,
I'm gonna go watch
just,
this puke off.
Yeah, I gotta go watch this puke off.
Oh, hey, Denise. Yeah, like, I've been all cool about it. Like, oh, did it just die?
And she's just like, yeah, I gotta go watch this puke off.
I think
my
favorite line in the entire movie is, "You look pretty." What? I said, "You look shitty, Denise." Tonight, you look shitty.
So honestly, good. One of my favorite offhand comments is Bill Hader walks back in after Rod and Denise are sitting at the like picnic table or whatever. And, he's like,
girl out from the
it's not once they get to that. It's literally right when Bill Hader gets back and Andy Samberg gets up and Bill Hader's character just goes like, hey, that bathroom's like really cool. I was like,
yeah, this bathroom's nuts.
That's
y'all.
Not the one I thought you were talking about. I thought you were talking about after Andy Samberg's character asks the girl out at the window that Bill Hader's character has a crush on or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he goes, wow, I'm like filled with rage right now or something like that.
Yeah, he's like so calm about it.
Yeah. Oh, no. That just totally reminded me of at the end when Rod and Denise kiss and like Bill Hader's like, why is he kissing his sister?
Oh, man.
And he's like, oh, that's not his sister. And he's just like, you just shattered my whole world.
That's what's great about Bill Hader's character is like all of those lines like that. He says them, you're like, that makes sense. You know, his character, his character's totally bought in. Like it doesn't make, it doesn't confuse the audience why he would think that.
Well, you know, he's not wearing a wig. He literally had hair extensions put in and like just left them there for the whole time they were shooting.
Yeah. I just love that one line. I don't even know what it was. It's like, I don't know exactly what it was, but something like, wow, I'm filled with rage right now.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Dude, I'm so filled with, I don't know, it's something like that. It's hella funny.
You guys were talking, it reminded me of the scene also where he was right after he asked the girl out and then he gets stood up on the date and then he starts talking to Denise about like how his dad died. Dude, I love this scene because it's such a serious scene. Andy gets very like into depth of how his dad died, almost too much detail. And, you know, we got a slow zoom happening the whole time onto Andy's face. And the very last line he says, he died instantly the next day. This is like, dude, that gets me every time. That was so good.
Well, I love how he starts that bit too. And he's like, have I ever told you about my dead dad who's like super dead?
Yeah. Cause he's trying to distract Denise.
Yeah. Cause I was going to say like that scene is actually really telling for his character because he looks like he could be an asshole. He doesn't care about anything, but he actually does. His character does. And his character is like actually a really caring person. And the whole thing with his stepdad is actually because he cares a lot about his stepdad, but he can't tell himself that.
And his stepdad actually cares a lot about Andy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
That's actually like the way they played out that like character development between the two. It's actually really well
done. It's not a bad script.
No.
It's not a bad script.
It's not.
Yeah. It's just like he says that to distract Denise from her shitty boyfriend.
Yeah.
And it's like actually really funny because it's like he's so willing to put himself in the like, I don't know if it's not like the, what's the word I'm looking for? Something like in the bad spot, but he's throw himself under the bus kind
of. Okay. Yeah.
He's willing to throw himself under the bus to make somebody else feel better.
Right. He's
almost quite literally.
He's willing to like literally jump into the pool and like he believes that he can get out of any scenario in a way. It's like, he believes that he can make Denise distract Denise to talk about his dad or whatever.
Yeah. And that's, in that moment, it feels not even for his own motives. It felt like more for like her sake.
He was protecting her.
Yeah. Which is really weird deep for this movie.
That's great. Right? I love that we're catching up on that stuff.
Dude. Well, like also though, how great is Will Arnett in this? And I know.
Oh, great.
God, I know he was only on set for like 2 days, but
I hate half of Will Arnett's characters. And that's exactly what they're there for.
Yes.
Like, like almost like it's so many movies he's cast is just for you to fucking
hate. He's the dirt bag.
Oh,
but he's the guy that you love to hate. Yeah. You love to hate him.
Yeah.
Okay. But no, he had a TV show that made it like 2 seasons to where he's like it was kind of like BoJack, but it was like live action where he's like
BoJack, right?
He is BoJack.
He is BoJack, but he has another, movie where he's like a recovery, or not a movie, but it's a TV show where he's like a recovering alcoholic, drives his bike around Venice Beach all the time, and he's just working on like becoming a better person.
Sounds like BoJack.
It's literally why I was like, it's live action BoJack.
Yeah,
it was live action BoJack, but it's so weird to see him like play not the asshole, but it's still him playing the asshole because it's like he was prior an asshole and he's making amends now that he's sober or whatever. And it's like he's always in some way.
Yeah.
An asshole.
Well, and to give another example, Blades of Glory, he's an asshole in that movie. Have y'all seen
Blades of Glory?
It's so great. But to your point, Todd, like he's only on set supposedly for just 2 days, but he's got a great impact in this movie. A lot of quotable lines. Like,
absolutely.
There's the flavor. Like, I say that randomly. And then speak of Diablo, like,
oh, babe, no.
Babe, wait. Come back. Babe, no.
And that's also to your point, Dom, of like, they just let the camera roll.
They let it linger. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I noticed about that is a lot of movies ground characters in world.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like everybody would be looking at that guy like, what the hell is this guy doing? Nope. I'm pretty sure they gave direction to every extra in the background. Ignore him like he doesn't exist. Because if you watch the background,
yeah,
they ignore him like he doesn't exist when he's yelling, babe, no, babe.
Oh, dude.
It's so funny because it's like, it just puts it even more to that point. Like, this doesn't matter. And I was half expecting him to be like, oh, shit. Well, anyways. But right. Like, he just keeps going.
So it's, good.
It's funny. It's so randomly funny and unnecessary. And that's why it's funny.
A lot of it's unnecessary.
Dude, you know what car is so overrated?
The Corvette.
Corvette.
I honest opinion of a Corvette. Those like early 2000s to probably like the 2010s era of Corvettes, I think are ugly as fuck. I think the new Corvettes look really cool, but like those like early 2000s, I think are super ugly.
I honestly, unless it's like a 67 Corvette or like literally a 2023, I don't like it. The body look has never been like my favorite.
I think we're kind of on the same page. It looks like a plastic like Hot Wheels
car. Is it just two seats?
Yeah, it is two seats.
Yeah, but it's just
so worthless to me for a car.
Yeah. It's not practical.
Yeah.
But
they should make a six-seater Corvette, don't you think?
They should try.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to do that with a mid-engine, but that's fine.
Zero to 60 in 40 seconds.
Bro! Hey, they have those. Those are called minivans.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Or Volvos.
Dude, a Volvo's kind of
fire. That was my high school car.
I kind of love Volvos.
Volvos are really safe.
They are safe. I had a 91 Volvo in high school. Rubber bumper. Got hit a few times. No damage.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
I got in one accident in my entire driving career. It was when I was a senior in high school, and I rear-ended one of my buddies.
Dang. Really?
Yeah. I was doing something really stupid. I was in the parking lot, and there was a line always to get out, and I thought we were just rolling, so I didn't have my foot on the gas. And I looked down to put music on my phone because I'm in high school, and I need to listen to music when I'm driving, and boop. Right in my friend's car.
Dude, I've done very similar things, actually.
Cell phone related, huh?
It was really
awkward. Not really. Actually, the first time I ever like rolled into somebody, it wasn't like a wreck. It messed up my car, didn't even leave a mark on the other car. But it was me and my nephew. My nephew's like one day older than me, but we both like picked up these girls and he's riding in the back seat and we're at the stoplight. And I saw him like going to make a move out the corner of my eye. So I started like fixing the rear view mirror to just like be like, do it, you know, make that move. And when I was fixing the mirror, I like let my foot off the brake and I just like rolled forward into a Beamer.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that one was great.
That's funny. So I'm guessing that chick didn't want much to do with you after that.
I don't know. I honestly don't remember.
I thought you were wingmanning for him.
I was wingmanning for him.
Yeah, he was wingmanning.
Got it.
Yeah, but
that probably didn't work out too well after you got an accident while you're trying to wingman.
Not really. I mean,
he's like,
fine.
They didn't notice.
Yeah, they really didn't mind. So one of the crazy things about this movie is that the poster that they ended up going with wasn't the one that the Lonely Island guys actually enjoyed. And I'll throw up a picture of it in the video for you guys. But
now look at that. It's right there.
Look at that.
It's crazy.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
It's right.
But anyways,
here.
Yeah. The OG poster, it's like the one that they wanted to roll with, it's so much better because it's just like Rod turned to the moped, bowing on a mountaintop. And the tagline, it's the same tagline for both, but it's smack destiny in the face.
Yeah.
And it's like the OG one that the Lonely Island dudes wanted to use, it feels so much more like one of those inspirational posters.
Oh, yeah.
the hang in theirs. And
that's what I feel like the Spirit Animals also had the same kind of vibe of.
That makes way more sense, actually.
Right?
There's an eagle in the poster.
It's that spiritual kind of like, I'm going to nail this because I have the power of the spirits on my side.
Dude,
I see that.
He totally believed in himself.
Yeah.
He did.
And that is one of the better things about like Rod as a character.
He looked pretty.
It's just that true natural. He's a full person. Like the character development, like it's not just a one-sided person. He's complex. Right. Yeah. He's got all the emotions. He actually has like insecurities and jealousies, yeah. And he's cool a beans, full-rounded cool character, which is actually super cool. Also, though, I love Kevin.
Can Yorma's I say something about the poster?
Yeah, say something about the poster.
So that's awesome. That's an awesome find. I had never seen that before. But
do you have it on your screen now?
Yeah.
Yeah, check it out. But I actually, so my one of my good
that's
friends.
That's like the final shot, sorry.
One of my good friends, Brad Scar, gifted me the Hot Rod poster. That was the one that was approved. And if you know me, if you ever lived in the same place as me, that thing has hung up somewhere in my house since high school. Even now, where I live with my wife, it's in the office.
She so, loves really, that, I bet.
It was actually the first thing we hung up in the house. So because there was already a nail there. I was like, hey, this is great.
That's perfect.
So but, that but actually is a perfect thing that leads my question.
Well, let me just say something real quick about Brad Scar. He also made this helmet, which is here. If you're watching the video, he designed this helmet. Well, I didn't design it, but he painted it, found the right Jofa helmet. Got to give a shout out to my boy, Brad. Very talented guy.
And that is the exact not real one from the movie.
Exactly. It even has a mustache.
It does.
Sorry, it's not actually.
No, I was just going to ask is, did that poster as it's gone with you from place to place to place, was it originally hung up as just poster with tacks plugged into the wall or is it framed now? Cause it said, you said you hung it up on a nail.
It is framed now. I think before originally it was like sticky tack, but I was scared. I was scared to put staples in there, man.
Let's be honest. Put holes in there. It's not a real poster that you loved if you didn't stick it up with tacks at least.
That's
once.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. It's got to have that character built into it.
Like, man, frames like are expensive. Cause if you really love they that, you're not ever going to resell.
No,
right?
Yeah, I'm not really selling that.
Well,
that,
I also feel like every dude has a single piece of decor that like they've brought with them from place to place. Like I have a tapestry I've put up in every spot that I've had. But this actually is a natural segue. Is in the house in the movie, like the family house. What's their family name? The Powells?
I think so.
Well, his is Kimball.
Right. But
because he kept
his Frank's house or whatever.
So my. I don't know.
He's a stepson. He's a stepson.
Yeah. Oh, he's a stepson? Yeah. Stepson. Oh, I thought he was adopted.
No, that was his mom. That was his mom.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. I thought he was adopted.
But either way, in the actual house, all of the pictures that they have, like as their decorations, are actually like their childhood photos from Yorma and like Andy Samberg, like growing up.
That's cool. Because
they've been friends for so long that they actually were able to use real photos and they didn't have to do any like editing to cut and paste someone's
putting
head.
Putting them
on
together.
That's awesome.
I feel like that's actually surprisingly common to use old photos of an actor, just not as common to have two actors playing siblings.
Right.
100%.
In photos together.
It's wild, actually. Yeah. But no, I think that's like part of what's cool. But also like their set decorations and like the costuming and all of the like art that went into the movie is actually surprisingly like really solid.
Yeah.
Like there's even a Yo-Yo Ma poster.
Really?
Y'all know who Yo-Yo Ma is?
Yeah.
He's a cello guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying there's just a bunch of like nostalgia random stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
So this is kind of going back a little bit. I just need to say it. The movie poster.
Yeah.
That was not the one that they actually got approved to use is, I don't know if you watched after the credits. I just kind of had it playing while I was finishing up my notes for this. And it got through the credits and there was a little like post credit scene of,
really?
Yeah, of him doing like yoga or Tai Chi or whatever it is, silhouetted with his bike there, like that movie poster.
Oh,
okay.
Might be able to look it up if you want to see
so
it.
I'm like so sad that I haven't seen this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen this movie so many times and I guess I've never just like
It was him silhouetted doing his Tai Chi with his bike also there silhouetted. Like that movie poster.
I love
Dude,
this.
That
Dom.
Makes me
Dom,
feel like
Dom's
a bad film guy.
Dom's first time to watch this movie and he goes all in.
Yeah.
He goes to the end of the credits.
I mean, I'll be honest. A lot of time when I first watch a movie, I will end up watching the credits, just not even like because I'm like, oh, I want to see what's after the credits, just because I'll be like,
you got to pay respect to the people who made it.
A little bit, but also because I'm just like thinking about the movie and I'll just end up sitting there, like kind of not processing, but like thinking about it, especially when I'm watching movies for the podcast, because I'm trying to formulate what I'm going to want to talk about.
That's how it was after every Black Mirror episode, just sitting in silence, watching the credits,
be like,
eyes glossed over because I'm just like, wow.
Because you're like thinking of like, I know every situation in my life that's been exactly that moment.
See, I just like to I actually do like watching the credits. Like I have been really bad about it recently, but I usually try to like,
I put respect on people's
names. Yeah, I put respect on people's names. Like, I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm...
My name's in the credits a few times. I want to see it.
That's right, Dom.
Well, like, dude, once the credits start really speeding up and they start doing the credit roll, like, faster and faster, that's when I start watching with intent because I'm like, I'm not going to miss you, Cindy, whoever, you know?
I'm not going to miss you, you second AD. Like, I'm going to know who you are.
It moves a little too fast. It moves a little too fast for me.
I know. But I'm also just, like, curious to see what kind of roles they had on the set. Like,
yeah,
because there's always something random. Like, we had watched, we've seen Tommy Boy recently, and like that one, it's famous for the deer scene, but I never knew that it took 5 weeks for them to get the deer to do that, you know? So they had like
in the movie, to be honest,
standing on the hood or whatever kind of like deal.
Yeah. It's, we explain it in the episode whenever we actually do that, but it's just one of those that's like, you never really know what goes into making a movie. So it's like, even for something as simple as like Hot Rod, like you got to think there's got to be at least 3 or 4 stuntmen for Rod, at least a stunt coordinator.
But
then there's
also a prosthetic person.
Yeah. Water safety for the pool scene.
That's true.
Like, it's just, you never know what goes into it. And like,
I could be a water safety.
I used to be a lifeguard.
I never was a lifeguard, actually.
You know, I had a job that my job title was lifeguard, but I never got certified. So I just worked the water slides. And that was the best part, dude. At the end of the day, they would send up all of the tubes and I would just get to ride them on repeat and bring all the tubes back down.
Did you have a whistle?
I did have a whistle.
It's tight.
A whistle.
So I was probably more qualified to be a lifeguard than you were. And you were actually a lifeguard and I never was.
Yeah.
Because I had a coach. So I had to do all the like the certifications for being
a swimmer?
Lifeguard. Yeah. And played water polo.
Oh, that's right.
And then I coached. Too, so I had to get all like the first aid, whatever like safety stuff,
CPR and everything. Yeah.
So like I knew all that, but I was never actually a lifeguard. So I was probably more qualified than Todd, but he actually had the lifeguard certification.
Oh, no doubt.
Or not the certification, but the title.
Oh. So one of my favorite things about this movie is actually like the locations that it's filmed at. Because Vancouver. It's Vancouver, but then I mean, for some of the shots, they had to go like all around British Columbia and everything like that. Cause like one of the best scenes, best montages, obviously, is the Footloose homage with the dance fighting.
Oh, like, yeah.
And the fact that he starts whipping out gymnastics. I mean, you can't get much better than that. This is a like fun moment of the film. But like, I think that was filmed up in like Coatacalm or something like that. I don't know. It's
Super, Canada.
Super hard to pronounce.
I've never been to
Canada. Dude, you would love it.
Yeah, you would love it.
I love it.
But no, it's great because like when he's falling down the hill or everything like that and he gets down and there's the billboard down at the bottom.
Yeah, one big jump.
That was an art direction, by the way. That was a legitimate billboard on the side of the road at the time for like a skydiving place.
They just got lucky?
They got lucky.
Yeah, Is that
something you have to like get approval for or can you just put that in your movie because it's public? Like
that's a quick
like
question.
It didn't have... All it had was the legal copy down at the bottom. It didn't say like,
Are you sure that was a real, like a legit billboard?
I'm like,
you're throwing out a lot of facts. Like, you know, for sure.
Yeah, dude. I mean, we do research.
Show me the proof.
Show me the Carfax.
I mean, I like that you brought that up though. Carfax. Show me the Carfax. I love that you brought that up though. Cause that was another part where I felt like kind of, it landed a little soft for me for that to be the motivating moment for him to realize I need to do one big jump. You know, cause if you're not reading the billboard, it's like you miss it.
Yeah,
see, you
missed it. I kind of missed it a little bit because I kind of thought like he was like, I know what stunt I'm going to do now. Skydive. That's what I thought.
It was a little confusing.
Yeah. I don't know why, but for some reason him like he also falls for almost a full minute straight of runtime, which is great. And it changes mountains. Like,
and what's
three
that an
times.
Homage to? What's that? The falling?
I don't know.
Okay.
Man. I just knew the dancing was the homage to Footloose.
Well, him falling down the mountain for a long time. I remember someone saying that it was like, that's like also like this one movie. But I do love that scene. And that's one of those scenes too, where if you still haven't bought into the absurdness of the movie, you will once you start seeing Andy Samberg doing Olympic style gymnastics.
Yeah. Right.
And then falling for 45 seconds.
I also just love the fact that the mountain changes like 3 different times. It's 3 different like types of scenery. And it's like
gravel.
Yeah. Honest, and then the ending
I kind
of
zoned
going
out
off,
during
like,
that part a little
did
bit.
Did you? Did you? What were you doing?
I don't know. I think it was just falling for so long. I was just like.
You were like, you got the joke
yeah.
at that point. So it
my attention kind of lost itself a
dude,
little bit.
But it's so that's great good, because good. Right before he gets to the like the last part of the fall, it like cuts away from the falling and it does an establishing shot of like a different mountain And then it's like some slow B roll over some like native grass or whatever.
And then he goes flying through.
To like shooting like straight up at a cliff. And it's just the body comes flying over and you're like, what?
And like somebody had to do that. Like some stunt guy did that.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was a dummy involved on any of that.
There probably was.
Yeah. Or even then they might have like dug a trench and put a net down and like laid some false grass over the top or something.
Can we talk about budget real quick? Like what would we think that the budget alone for stunts would have been in this movie? It's $25 million budget and there's quite a bit of stunts and that's a lot that you're asking for somebody to do with their body.
I mean,
to fail.
I feel like the stunt budget would be surprisingly less than
I'd say maybe 1%.
Reason being, it's not stunts that involve a lot of destruction of vehicles or stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, there are some pyro stuff.
Right.
But there's not a lot of destructible things.
Right.
I mean, I know there's a lot of stuntmen and they're not cheap. But at the same time, I feel like when you're doing massive takes of big stunts, like, we're talking about an action movie where like 100 cars are exploding.
Right.
Well, those are really expensive because you have to get all those cars again kind of deal. Plus all the stunts.
So you think under a mil?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't have enough. I don't actually know enough about stunts to
see. That's what I'm saying.
Apparently Todd does. Todd does.
No, I'm thinking it's probably like 250,000, like at most towards the stunts.
Oh, man.
Towards the stunts. Yeah.
I would say like 800.
That's
like, I mean, there's like several stuntmen. So you got, I would say they each are getting like 100K.
I feel like it's probably a little steep.
You think that's steep?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is steep. I just, like, they're asked to do these stunts. And like, I'm like with you. I really don't know. I'm saying what I would want if I was, getting,
that's fair.
hitting my body against this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Well, also, like, I mean,
do they deserve that?
Probably.
Well, what they make, I have no idea.
Yeah, no idea.
A fat bit of their budget probably went to their production insurance, though.
Okay.
So it's like,
that's true. Yeah.
I would like, take the full scale budgets with like a grain of salt because I feel like your marketing budget and all of that also comes out of there as well.
Does it?
Mm.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't know if production
budget versus like full scale budget.
I think production budget is just production.
Yeah.
I don't think it includes. Okay. It might include production insurance.
It definitely does.
It would include, but as far as marketing, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think marketing would be. But it's also like, if you think about it, like all of the different stunts that they do, there's like, they probably did a day for each of those stunts. So it's like in the grand scheme, they filmed over the course of like 2 months. But even then you maybe have all of your stunt people there for like,
there was fire though. Weeks. We had people on fire. You know?
Yeah, that one.
Although,
well, also, was two,
that's okay, a really easy one.
There is
for,
like, a, I do know this, do, that like, pay like, scale for stuntmen actually does like, it's a moving scale based on the stunts that they are doing. So it's like getting lit on fire, your rate goes up, you know,
sure,
it goes up with each like level of danger.
The classic fight scene stunts is probably not that.
That's low. That's got to be low.
I will say, though, that Andy Samberg did ask to do all of his stunts that they would allow him to. So, like, the pool scene, he did that. That's Andy Samberg on that bike.
That one would be fun.
The one of him, of him going up the ramp?
No, like, coming down the ramp.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah, yeah.
The full
into the pool.
That's awesome. Man, that's gutsy because you've got machinery with you. Going into the pool, like,
you're fine.
I feel like you could get wrecked really good.
Let's be honest.
He probably like.
Have you ever ridden a bike into a pool before?
Yeah.
No.
I have.
You weren't.
But it is awesome.
You weren't that kid that was just like,
if that
no one's gonna stop me, so I'm gonna do it.
If that truly was Andy Samberg doing that stunt, amazing job because it went straight up and then just nosedive down, no flinching.
But that's what's great of it, because I feel like it was just him like, I'm going to do this. And then he starts doing it and he goes like full clench and he's just like, oh, shit. Oh,
yeah,
shit,
he just
oh,
held
shit.
On. He held on for dear life. What if he actually landed it? You know what I mean?
There ain't no way he was ever landing it.
Because they didn't test it. I mean, they might have tested.
They tested it.
There's no way in the world the principal actor did that and they did not test it. Like, there's no way in the world.
I'm sure probably what happened is a stuntman showed him, here's how you can make this look good. And
yeah,
then Andy,
they probably said it's gonna look the best if you just hold on to the bike because it's gonna look dumb.
Yeah.
Most people are gonna bail. So what's the dumbest way you could look like it? Hold on to the bike.
Yeah, don't give up. And that's once again a testament to his character.
But also going into like the level of danger of some of the stunts, like obviously the work retreat where they blow him up, Super dangerous. Okay,
that's
stunt.
A dangerous one.
Super dangerous stunt. But on the flip side, getting hit by the minivan with the mattress on it, and he's wearing like three different types of pillows and bubble wrap. Okay, out of the whole training montage, that's the one that made me burst out laughing because it's like he's hiding like, behind he's a
like
tree.
Hiding. He's like, good work.
Gets over to the other tree, and it's like, oh, I don't know where this car is going to come from. And it's like, it's a full car in the woods. Like, come on, you're going to see it.
That's one of those tenets of comedy. It's off screen to on screen.
It's phenomenal.
Is like one of those like things that are funny.
And the like fact the that truck they do coming the, into frame.
Yeah. And the fact that they do the callback to it.
Yeah.
Oh, even
it's
better.
One of those funny things is you go from off screen to on screen or on screen to off screen are like the funny things. Don't always have your jokes like always on
already
screen.
In front of your face. Yeah.
But also, but like, out like of the hiding, stunts, I'm so it. Willing to do that one.
And he gets
which one?
That one. That
the van.
Dude, I would rather do the jump on the bike into the pool or the getting lit on fire one than fucking get hit by a truck, dude.
I would definitely do the pool one. I wouldn't do the fire, and I would not do the mattress.
I wouldn't be too scared.
I think
about
that
the fire.
Was Andy doing the mattress. By the way, it looked
really.
Like, I mean, we got to watch it again.
Which mattress?
Because I don't remember a truck happening.
Like out of all of them, I feel like that's the one that like if you know and see it's coming,
you're gonna flinch.
Well, no. But also, no, like, I grew up playing so hockey to where bro. It's like I got hit the same way at like similar speeds growing up. So it's like, as long as you know how to prepare yourself for that hit, it's not that bad.
No, but hockey's different though, because if you're getting hit by a van, think about it. If you're getting hit in hockey, it's not your entire body getting pushed at one time. You can like clench it. Are you saying you're getting hit in the head on hockey a lot when you're taking hits?
Yeah, because people's like shoulders and elbows like fly up a little bit, but it's also
but
like—are
you taking it more in the shoulder and the chest?
You are taking it shoulder and arm, but that's what I'm saying is if you can prepare for the van and you like.
Nah, but the van, I feel like that mattress there is just gonna be straight like whole body and
head.
Yeah,
I don't think there's really any true cushion.
But that's why he's wearing a helmet.
Also got pillows on.
Yeah,
duct tape. He's
that's
safe.
Still a concussion. I'd rather get lit on fire.
How many concussions have you had?
I've had like two, and they suck every time.
They're not that bad, dude.
I hate them.
Just chill sack. Watch movies.
I still just randomly get headaches from concussions. Like, no, it just sucks. Like, you're just like,
you got
it all of a sudden. You're just like, fuck. Huh?
What?
So was it ever, I know it's too sidetracked, but I'm curious. Was it ever from water polo?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Okay, tell me the two and then let's
I got
move
hit
on.
In the face from water polo a lot, but never a concussion enough. I got
bloody
I chipped
nose?
A lot
you
of
get
teeth.
A bloody nose?
Oh, yeah. I chipped a lot of teeth from water polo.
You get your
too.
Teeth fixed Ooh. Or you still got them chipped?
Got a couple fixed.
Yeah.
Couple still chipped.
Yeah.
I got elbowed in the throat one time when I was swimming. I was chasing a guy trying to get the ball back. I get elbowed in the throat and then I like gasped for air as like just a like knee jerk reaction.
Right.
And then inhaled a bunch of water. So that's that was probably the worst thing ever. I was just like, I just couldn't breathe for like a solid 2 minutes. I was just like,
I'd be like, I'm done with this sport. I'm out. Like,
yeah, I would have been like, dude, I just got throat chopped.
I'm out, dude. I'm out.
It sucks. And the ref wouldn't give us a timeout because I was fucking dying. So I just like have like swim back to the. Yeah, it was dumb. No, I crashed on a scooter one time.
Oh, that was recent. Was that?
Yeah, that was recently.
Dude,
so I got a concussion
from
that recently.
You're much better now.
Yeah, I wasn't wearing a helmet. Wear helmets. I was not being a good stunt.
Follow Rod's example.
Yeah.
Where's
the helmet?
Cool. Old school helmet. Hockey helmet everywhere you go.
He did is that a scar from it?
That is a scar from it. Yep.
Man.
But that was one of them. But I also got other ones from like when I was like younger, like riding bikes and shit. I don't know how many I've actually gotten. I've only like known I've had two, but I probably had more from just like
being probably from water polo, to be honest. You said you got hit in the face a lot.
Yeah, but it was never hard enough to like really jostle my head that much.
Okay.
Or just like smack.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know, I was going to say something earlier before we got on that topic, and it was about the fire. The fire precautions, they put like a whole gel on you, and they have a fire suit.
Right.
And like that's, and they have like 10 people with
fire
suits ready to go. So honestly, I'd rather do that than get hit by a fucking van. Cause like, I don't know, dude, I feel like the van would hurt and the fire's just going to be like a little hot for a little bit, and then you're going to be fine. Like before it could ever go bad, they're already ready to put it out.
That's fair.
Maybe early Hollywood fire? No, thank you.
Yeah, no thanks.
But like now, you know.
Better.
There's so many precautions.
To tie
insurance.
It back a little bit, with the office retreat explosion, one of my favorite lines of the movie is when...
Is everything ready?
You're a terrible stuntman. What?
What?
You're a terrible stuntman. What? It goes on. No, I heard you. It was just really mean.
Yeah. He asked it like one too many times, and that's what's funny about it. It's like two or three times. Okay, that's funny. Like the four times or five times he just says or something like that. Yeah. It's like, wow.
And the fact that the other guy fell for it, he just kept falling for it. It's good.
What? No, I heard you.
Yeah, that looked like a gnarly stunt. That looked like a gnarly stunt.
Yeah, dude. And it felt like it was like one of those that they didn't tell any of the extras what was about to happen because all of the office retreat people were just like,
I mean, there's like shrapnel, you know, like there was like wood flying around, you know, and like people close by.
It's all probably like balsa wood stuff.
Okay. Okay.
They've
movie magic.
They've got movie magic. That's where the budget for a lot of the stunt stuff goes.
Probably
to make sure they can do it safe.
Yeah.
Also to rent. Because
if you would have did it for cheap, doing it cheap isn't necessarily safe.
Well, I saw the behind the scenes of whenever he's going up the ramp at the very end and like he starts getting disconnected from the bike. The dude's attached to cables, you know, like, oh, I mean, so really? They edited out the cables and whatnot, but still, it looked gnarly.
You can tell he's on cables. He's got that classic, like Cupid flying look.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, who cares?
Like you said, the budget goes into the safety of making sure that the stunts aren't going
to
kill
somebody. I'm pretty sure. The final stunt, though, took like a quarter of the budget to do because they had 1,200 extras. All the scaffolding, building the ramps, renting the school buses, all that, and the safety.
Budget thing. A big thing about budget that I feel like is really surprising to people is how much catering is for budget. That day for catering was probably so fucking expensive.
So do we really think that each of those seats were filled with a person, or do you think that some of that was computer generated?
No, they were people.
Oh, okay.
Like, Andy Samberg's mom is in there. Like,
I heard Akiva's mom's in there, too.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised about people because it's just small enough for people.
Okay. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like a full football stadium, you're definitely going to want a CGI. That's just way too many people to like get. But that amount of like seatage, fairly reasonable. Like that's fairly reasonable
that's
to
doable.
Do. Because like at that point, it's like, do you have anybody there or just nobody at all? That seems like I'm not a big like CGI guy, but I kind of know a bit about it from talking to people. Uh-huh. And I feel like that's just about the cutoff where you either do it real or you don't do any at all.
I'm glad they filled up the stands. I'm glad that was a choice that they did. They didn't do it where there's like eight people in the stands.
Yeah.
To like further the joke. Nobody believes in the guy, but like people showed out for him, you know?
Well, it also makes like the acting for that scene feel a little more real because they are interacting with a massive crowd.
And who wants to see a big ass stunt?
I was just going to bring that up. Dude, Andy's speech to the entire crowd is just so great.
And he just drops the mic.
Raw.
Yeah. So raw.
But it's like, I would have loved to be in that crowd as an extra for that scene because it's like, you know that they were all given the direction to just be like, yeah, whatever he says, just erupt.
Oh,
but as soon as I start hearing what he actually is saying, I would be like, oh, this is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But dude, I mean, if I could have been on it, like this is a set I would have wanted to be on without a doubt.
To talk about that day in particular, that's the day where we first see Chris Parnell. Chris Parnell's AM radio host. He's an SNL cast member back in the day, a little bit before Andy.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard that so on the director commentary that Chris Parnell, all of his lines when he's speaking to the radio, they asked Seth Meyers to like, hey man, can you help us out? We don't have any jokes for him. Seth Meyers apparently wrote out like 10 pages of jokes
the night before.
And then Chris Parnell read off a bunch of options. Like that's what's cool. Like whenever you bring in, you know, these guys, like when you bring in an SNL cast, you're going to get a bunch of other comedians around, a bunch of other writers. You get Lorne Michaels help.
They just want to hang out and like have a good time.
Right. That's what's super cool about it.
Like they asked Seth Meyers, and he's like, yeah, sure. I'll fucking write something.
Totally. Why not? It's awesome.
I heard when it was like originally written, jeez. But no, I heard when it was like originally written, they had like Will Ferrell in mind to like either direct or play some form of part.
I heard Dane Cook too.
Really?
Yeah, Dane Cook.
You actually mispronounced that. You said written when it should have been written.
That's so much more of a stretch though, dude.
Why?
I wonder where that joke came from. Where did that joke even come from?
I mean, that joke is in Family Guy.
I don't know which one was first. No.
Probably first. In this
I think they're both ripping off of something.
Probably.
From well before.
Because it's a commitment
You're
to
probably
a bit.
Not
it's
wrong.
I feel like it's kind of like the Wilhelm scream. The Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like it's just like a trope in comedies to where if it's like one of those.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. If we can do
it's just
not?
What you do.
It's just a certain way about going about things, you know, in which it's written. Yeah, I can't which? Do the. I can't do which? The written.
You went in with confidence, though.
I went.
You
I,
did.
I felt it. I felt it.
Much like Rod, you know, you believe in yourself, even though you might fail.
For real.
Hey, I resonate with Rod. Talk about cast members or characters that you resonate with. Yeah, I think that that's why a lot of people probably like Rod. It's a lot of us. We probably all kind of believe in ourselves in some way. You know, the people will say no.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm with that. I think the character that resonated the most with me, though, was Bill Hader.
Okay. I was about to say that, but I didn't want to be mean.
You better say that about Todd. I thought you were going to say that about yourself. I was going to say about you, Todd.
I don't want to be mean, though. I don't want to be mean, though.
Dude,
no,
fair,
but I get
man.
It. I get it. It's just like, it's he's just chill. He's just chill. He doesn't give he a shit. Chill. Like, he's just kind of doing his own thing.
And he thinks like, that I mean, Denise is Rod's sister. Like
yeah. Yeah. He's just
why
like,
is Rod naked?
He's like
sister?
A page removed from everything. Man. I love it. I feel
he's
that.
Just, like, he's just vibing and he doesn't care about what's happening as long as he can have like a good time doing it.
Kind of yeah. Thing.
Totally. Right? Hanging out with the friends.
Yeah, yeah dude. Yeah. And also just like the whole like working at a bowling alley, that kind of vibe, and just being kind of like
a which almost fits D-gen. You more.
You were well, a theater cleaner.
Yeah, I was a theater cleaner, dude. I worked like my vibe when I was working at the movie theater was so similar to the like the way he was
Did
at
you
work.
Ever get
no, fucking... not at a, at yeah, a movie theater. Fuck. No.
You want to know a fun fact?
A film reel.
You want
a visual film reel? Just
a fun fact about the ice rink.
Yeah.
So the basement was really one of the only sets that they had to build, and it was on the ice rink when it was out of season.
Really?
So the ice rink it was
they used it as like
yeah,
a
it's concrete.
Yeah, they used it as studio. They used. I thought you'd like that hockey
yeah.
guy.
Yeah. You know?
So they built the basement on the ice rink, and then of course the ice rink whenever it was in session.
Dang. Okay, that's actually
that's
really
great.
Cool.
That's funny,
dude. That's smart of them to do it when it was out of season. Also, speaking of out of season, so they recorded this. Obviously, outside of they did it during the hiatus of the SNL season, which is, you know, how they're supposed to do it if it's a Broadway video. But like, what's double interesting is the fact that like they were tweaking the script because Pam Brady wrote yeah. the script for this, but the Lonely Island dudes went through and tweaked it and rewrote it in their like their voice tone and humor,
which was smart. I'm glad they did that.
Absolutely,
it would have been a bust if they didn't.
But they were, you
I mean,
know,
it was a bust anyways.
Well, you're right, but it's not anymore.
Technically,
it's not anymore.
Yeah.
Either way, they started rewriting the script June 2006 and then filming started on July 24th. They wrapped filming September 23rd and they were back on set for SNL September 25th.
That is commitment.
That is commitment.
Right? Like, I feel like any of these SNL dudes who are still active cast members of SNL that do their movies, they are truly grinding because yeah. it's like you do your whole season of SNL and then you have like a 3 month hiatus and almost all of them have a project during
well,
that time.
Which is really
you know
cool.
What the thing is there. So my dad likes to listen to the Dana Carvey podcast.
Oh, okay.
Nice. I love Dana Carvey.
Dana's great.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had a podcast. That's awesome.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's Dana Carvey and David Spade.
Okay.
Oh, do a podcast. And they talk about like SNL.
Great deal.
And all like the old school guys on SNL and they have people on and talking whatever.
Do you listen to it?
Whenever I'm in his car with him when we're going somewhere.
Okay.
Because he always listens to it.
With your dad. Yeah. No choice. You're going to like this podcast. I guarantee
it's
it.
It's one of those things. Like we used to listen to the Ron Howard show when I would like take him to school in the morning because that's what you listen to in the car.
That's crazy.
His car, his
so
rules.
You were
you know?
Really like modeled into becoming like a film or entertainment guy. Through your dad, in a sense, because of his interests.
Does your dad own Men's Warehouse?
No, idea. No, he doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
People aren't going to get that joke because we're not going to include that into it. So you can probably cut that out, Todd. Sorry. I was doing full circle.
You're like the way you.
You're going to like the way you look.
Because you don't have a choice.
Dom's dad, you're going to like this podcast. Yeah.
No, but he listens. He listens to it in the car. And they just talk about how when you're on SNL, you get such like. Not a high, but the like you ride the wave of SNL.
Mm.
And if you really want to be successful outside of SNL, you need to ride that wave. Kind of like these guys, they would do it regardless. They would want
yeah,
to
they're
make
living
their
dream making this movie.
When they're on SNL, they have that like ethos of like, hey, we're going to do something, fund this thing kind of deal. And they're going to ride that wave of SNL because it's so massive and such huge following that. When you get on there, you finally can get a wave of like following it after. So I'm not surprised that people do it, but also feel like everybody on SNL, as far as I can tell, it's just something fun that you want to do when you're on it.
Kenan Thompson, perfect example, dude. He will never leave that show.
Yeah.
He's gotten all of the...
He's got all the records.
He's got all the records. he had a whole film career before he got on it.
He's got to be the longest running cast
member. Oh, he is.
He is.
Okay. Before, it was the guy that would play Bill Clinton, and I can't think of his name right now.
Oh, yeah,
you know what I'm
talking
about?
Yeah. But like, no, dude, Kenan had a full film career as like a child actor.
Daryl Hammond just
gets
came
on SNL. And then basically like he's done so much while still being on SNL. Like he hasn't lost an opportunity by staying with SNL. Whereas a lot of the cast members like Kristen Wiig, Bill Hader, Sudeikis, they ride the wave until the wave carries them past SNL.
Yeah.
And I think Kenan Thompson is one of those people who just truly loves getting to
do sketch comedy. I mean, he did it with All That. Like, he did it with Kenan and Kel, you know, Good Burger. Like,
dude, this is in his
Welcome
blood.
Welcome to Good Burger. Yeah. I love the Good Burger. Can I take
that should
your
be a
order?
Movie I'll do at some point.
I love Good Burger.
If you want to come back, we can do Good
I
Burger.
Would love to, yeah.
Dude, I mean,
we can do comedies with me. I'll do comedies. But at some point, let's do Remember the Titans. I mean, the greatest movie of all time.
True. We'll have to save. I'll just save some of these movies for John here.
Sounds good.
Dude, I love Remember the Titans. Dude, you're bringing up some great movies right now. Dude, I can't wait to go watch these. But no, this leads me to like a good way for us to kind of start trailing off near the end of this podcast.
All right.
What are some additional things you wanted to bring up? Because you being an editor, you loving sketch comedy. Like,
yeah.
What did this movie do for you in like some of those regards?
Wait, you like sketch comedy?
I was going to say love sketch comedy. It doesn't work. Doesn't quite work with the L. Yeah, man. This movie... I think we resonate in a similar way. This movie definitely resonates with me in a big way. I saw it when I was in high school, and I feel like that was really the time where I guess like my humor could be influenced. And it definitely was because of The Lonely Island and the digital shorts. And so seeing these three dudes make this movie, The Lonely Island, their characters are almost like it's three guys or it's a group of friends trying to make a dream come true, trying to make Rod kick his stepdad's ass, right?
Yeah.
But a layer past that, though, is the production of it. It's three best friends making their dream come true, making a movie together, you know, and so like having fun. And so for me, it was just like, man, this movie looks like so much fun to make. I want to do stuff like that. I want to make videos with my friends where we can laugh. And, you know, when we look back at it, we can be proud of what we made, but also we can just like reminisce, you know, and that's why I got into video. It's really because of the sort of stuff that these guys would make because they looked like they were having so much fun doing it. And yeah, it's also kind of indirectly taught me how to edit comedy, you know, like kind of cutting in the middle of a thought or cutting in the middle of someone saying something just to kind of keep the viewer guessing, right? Like you think that you're going to see the tail end of something, but nope, we're moving to the next scene, you know, and it's just... I think that there's a lot of lessons to be learned, especially from an editing perspective in this film and just in a lot of the stuff that these guys have made together because they do end up editing some of the stuff like the Cool Beans, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, Andy and Yorma, they edited that together. And I think that they edited a lot of their digital shorts as well. So, I think that this movie was definitely influential into my interest in comedy and editing as well.
Well, if you don't mind me bringing up some of your... past work.
Sure.
I mean, it clearly like influenced you and gave you kind of the chops to carry on, like you getting to do Good Mythical Morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also with like, you know, your bachelor stuff and your own YouTube you do.
Definitely. Did you edit Good Mythical Morning?
I was on the show, but I would work in their short what is it called? I already forgot. It's their short form content. So I worked in that. It was awesome, man. It was a great. Yeah. A lot of that influence from The Lonely Island and Hot Rod kind of informed me what could be funny.
You
know, humor is still subjective. Right. But a lot of that stuff I would try to take to the job for sure.
I feel like even learning how to edit comedy stuff like that goes beyond comedy. Like you learn what makes a good edit, what makes it like...
You learn timing.
Yeah, you learn timing. That's the biggest thing about comedy is timing.
It really is.
And I will also say, too, I think having a background in music, like my parents made sure that I like took piano lessons or guitar, didn't stick with those, but then I did stick with trumpet and marching band and all that. And just having the flow and understanding of rhythm and how music and score works. That's kind of how I feel whenever I am editing. Is the music is a really important part to any video that I edit, mm-hmm. or sound effects. And so I like to play with the song as if it was written for the edit, you know? So, yeah, there's a lot of things that have kind of like informed me on how to hopefully make good videos. And certainly with Hot Rod, like in our comedy standpoint. Yes, absolutely.
That was very well said.
Oh, thanks, man.
Absolutely. Out of everything we've said on this podcast today, I feel like that was the most well said.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's great.
It was well formulated. But to your point, like, I feel like this movie is influential in the fact of, like, it inspired you to want to go and get to do stuff in a similar lane.
Totally.
And, like, made me feel the same way. Because, like, at the end of the day, I've always said, I just want to make silly little videos with my silly little friends. And, like, that...
Still do.
Yeah, it's, like, same. At the heart of, like, what drives a lot of people to, you know, kind of work in our industry. Or they just want to make stuff that they enjoy, or make stuff that they enjoy doing, at least. And I think that's one of the things that, like, really resonates with a lot of people with this movie. But it's also where the movie excels, is it's, like, obviously Paramount came in and helped, and it's a Lorne Michaels production, but at the end of the day, it's the Lonely Island dudes going, this is something I really just wanted to make and wanted to make happen. Mm-hmm. And so nothing's going to stop them, and they go out and they make it. And that's just part of the fun that adds to the lore of the movie.
Some of the most fun things I've ever worked on have been passion projects for people.
Yeah.
This goes beyond a passion project for this movie. I mean, they had a $25 million budget, so right. It's not quite a passion project. It's a little like more of a legit project at that point. But so that's some of the most fun I've had, is doing those smaller budget things that people really want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you were saying, feels like they really wanted to make it.
Well, and I think that that's where that $25 million budget comes into play, is probably the people investing into making this film happen believed in these guys, mm-hmm. having fun making a movie.
Yeah.
You know, if you can have that core, then you can find that funding. You know, people look for passion when they're investing.
I don't know why this like flopped.
That's what I
like. Sometimes movies just flop for no reason.
Yeah.
I feel like it's part of like just some of the marketing buzz, but also it could have to do with like whatever else was in theaters at that time. It could have just gotten overshadowed.
True.
Like Oppenheimer just recently got announced as like one of the top grossing movies of all time to never reach number one in the domestic box
because
office.
Barbie.
Exactly. Like it just got overshadowed by Barbie. So even though it's a financial success, it's a box office flop.
I still haven't seen Barbie. I need to go see it.
I need to see it too. Yeah. It looks, I'm excited to see it. When you got a kid, it's hard to go see movies.
Yeah. Speaking of, exactly, do you have anything you want to?
Exactly how I feel.
Stomp.
Congrats.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. Is there anything you want to like promote, and anything you're doing like on the side now that you want to bring up, get people to come to?
I mean, I think that you're giving me a softball question. I appreciate that.
I'm teeing it up.
You're teeing me up. I mean, I do have a podcast called The Paternity Press, where it kind of documents the life of being a dad, figuring it out with my wife. But, you know, I've also learned that it's really hard to make a podcast when you have a newborn. So, I'm trying to keep up with it, but really it's for posterity. It's to kind of document it. So maybe one day looking back, Avery can listen to this and, you know, kind of see the document. I've shied away from doing video because I was like, video involves so much editing, but I've also learned audio involves a lot of editing.
It does.
Too,
so
it's still time consuming. Like, I thought I found the hack.
Let's just go back real quick. Video revolves a lot of editing, says the editor.
Yeah.
But I'm making a project. I don't want to do job. I don't want to do my work.
Editing is a love hate relationship I have. You know, it's, if I have a project that I'm really excited about and passionate about, I'll spend all the hours on it. But it can also be a very tedious job and frustrating. But you love to work on the things that you hate sometimes. But the last thing I'll say, the main thing is, if there's anything to promote, it's, if I'm going to put anything anywhere, it's going to be on my Instagram, which is Biscuit Pancakes. So,
oh, actually, yeah. Everybody should 100% go follow John. He's Biscuit Pancakes on Instagram, and his stories and content is actually amazing. It is highly talked about here in the office, and we sit on the edge of our seats waiting for more to come out.
What's going to happen next?
Yeah.
I have one question for all three of us.
Okay.
Because we kind of forgot to do it, and we're trying to make it a thing this season. Rating this movie.
Oh, yeah.
You get to choose how you want to rate it.
I am so proud of you right now.
Yeah.
Good job.
I was actually about to bring that up. Yeah. I didn't forget, but I gave you the opportunity to step up, and I'm so proud. I feel like Frank right now, dude.
You finally
punched me in the face.
I'll beat the shit out of you. I don't want to live in a world where I can't beat the shit out of you.
You start us off. What's your rating?
Okay, well, we usually like to have the guests choose how they want to rate it.
Okay, yeah.
We always leave it really open. We say you can make it a letter grade, and out of a 10, you can rank it versus compared to other movies that say the Lonely Island guys have made, or out of comedies or whatever. We leave it really
open-ended.
Most people just rank it out of 10 because that's like too open-ended and they get kind of scared. But I feel like that's kind of the point of it. Put you on your spot.
Yeah.
So how you want to rate it?
I get to set the rules for how you guys are going to rate it.
Yep.
Is that what I understand?
Yeah, essentially,
I think I would like you guys to pick something that you liked about the movie and use it on a 10 scale. So I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10 failed bicycle jumps.
I like it. See, this is the most interesting rating we've had so far. And this is what I want it to be every time.
Okay.
A 10 out of 10 failed bicycle jumps.
Yeah.
I love it.
And we got to go with failed because this movie did fail at the box office, but it's had a long tail to where it has really earned its 10 title.
Okay. I'm going to go 7 out of 10 for Spirit Animals.
Oh, okay. Because there's probably only 7.
There's only six.
Okay.
But
so are you the last one?
No, I'm saying 7 out of 10, meaning.
Could have been better.
Could have been better. Fair. I wanted maybe a different animal here and there.
Yeah.
Like a little more rare.
Like an armadillo.
Yeah. Like, dude, armadillo is a great spirit animal, you know?
What are they? It's eagle, fox, dolphin. I don't know what the
kitten,
last one
house
is.
Cat. And then I don't know what was between that.
I thought it was like a beaver.
It was definitely an animal that wasn't referenced before.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because it was eagle, fox, dolphin, and then kitten was the last one, but I don't know what that. I thought there was like.
That's
five.
What I mean. That's where it kind of fell a little flat for me.
I think it was six.
I thought it was five.
Either way, give it your rating because we got to wrap this up.
All right. I'm going to say an 8 out of 10 of awkward conversations.
That's great.
I like that.
Yeah.
Can I say something real quick about this movie? So I like you brought this up at the very beginning, and I think this can tie things up. You said how like this movie flopped, but it's a kind of a testament to like, you know, movies can still have a longevity, right?
Yeah, movies can be great even if they technically flop in the box.
What's cool about it is I think that is almost a direct reflection of Rod's character. You know,
that's true. Actually,
this dude totally believed in himself, ambitious, even in the moments where like things didn't work out for him, he still kept like saying, "I got this," you know. And that's a lot what this film has done too. This film came out, a lot of high hopes, especially people that knew who the Lonely Island guys were.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do well, but those people kept, I'm a day one hot rod guy. And so those people kept like talking about this, quoting this movie. It ends up getting the Netflix deal. So we got those fourth graders coming up and seeing it finally. And yeah, it finally kind of came together and really had its full circle moment of relating to Rod and that Rod has his success and so does Hot Rod.
Hell yeah. That is a perfect way to put a bow on it. So I guess this has been another episode of Theater Cleaners. Thank you, John, for hopping around.
Thanks for having me.
It was actually a really, really fun time.
I had a great time.
Really enjoyed having you on here. But either way, we got to wrap this up. Hope you boys can join me in with the sign off. But babe. Babe, no? Babe, wait.
Babe, wait.
Babe.
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 Babe, come back.
Babe, wait.
Babe.